Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. This week, my co-host and I are going to discuss the movie Scott Pilgrim from 2010. Introduce yourself, co-host.
Hi, everyone. This is Nick Jeff.
And, wow, you've been around.
Since the beginning, pretty much.
Yeah, since the
beginning.
Since
you had two hosts.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a couple different, it's been a couple different times we've sat down and chatted together. And so, you know, what I did was I made up a list of, well, I didn't make it. I asked for 20 films, and now I'm pretty sure I have 130 films or somewhere thereabouts because everybody keeps adding to the list. So it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I've been asking the co-host if somebody can co-host with me, and I let them pick the film and then I watch it. In this case, you gave me three choices and I picked the one I actually had available, which is Scott Pilgrim, which I have no complaints about. Now, have you read the books?
I read some of the comics, not all of them,
okay, me too.
Because I got them at a con once and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I never got the rest.
It was funny the way I've only read the first one, and the way I got it was, I remember this cause I thought it was so weird. There was no local comic shop, around here. And there is one of the malls, I don't think even I went, somebody else, I think maybe my daughter went or something. And what happened is a bunch of people got together and got the free comic book day stuff. They were able to, I mean, you got to pay for that stuff, but you get a discount, and they bought it all and they were handing it out for free in the mall because they wanted to promote all. And so this is one of the books I was able to snag. And the first time I read it, I was like, I don't know. I was probably about a third of the way through it. I'm like, okay, this is fairly weird, but I kind of liked it. But then once you started getting the groundwork of what this was, which is kind of like a video game sort of thing, then I was like, man, I'm like, this is really unique. But, you know, again, my to read pile is taller than my house, so I never picked up the rest of them. I always meant to, but just never did. And then the movie came out and I saw the movie, so I know how things go. And I'm like, I'll get to it eventually, but, you know. It will happen eventually.
I think Scott Pilgrim had been a thing for quite a while, because there's a mural on the side of the building that my comic book store in Halifax had, where it's like all Scott Pilgrim themed, right? And so I had already seen the art. So I remember when I got the comic, and I probably got it from Stranger Things anyway at the convention. When I got the comic, I was like, oh, hey, it's that thing. And then the movie came out and I was like, wait, that kind of reminds me of that thing. So it was just like all about like visual recognition. And I really enjoyed the movie. I think that the movie is, you know, it captures at least the feeling of what I remember reading the comic was like. And there is also Scott Pilgrim, the video game, which you really need to check out.
Yeah. I haven't played that. But I will have to investigate that. Unfortunately for Scott Pilgrim, not that, I mean, I don't really know. I'm sure that somebody would have tried to make a sequel to it if they had the opportunity to make the sequel to it. I'm not sure where they would have gone, with it, but the production budget was $60 million and the domestic gross was only $31 million. So,
which is horrible because it's such a good movie and it is immensely popular, but I think it's one of those things that it grew in popularity after it was out of the theaters.
It's definitely a cult film because the whole thing with it is that you have to, you know, you could take this same film and you could lose all the quirky aspects and all the graphic aspects they throw in there and just make a rom-com out of it. And you probably could have made it for, you know, $20 million or $10 million or $5 million. I mean, it wouldn't have been expensive at all. But it is the quirkiness of it that makes me love it. And the one thing I remember about, I saw this movie in a theater and I drug my family along with me. And if I remember right, everybody enjoyed it pretty much. I mean, nobody came out and said, man, that was horrible. They all enjoyed it. But the one scene that I loved more than any other was the battle of the bands between you know, Sex Bomb and the keyboardist. And they had the dragons and the big gorilla. And I was like, this is great use of the graphics and great use of showing, you know, what a comic book can do on screen, and just so non-apologetic about what they're doing, you know.
Yeah,
they just went at it, you know.
Well, another thing that I really liked is, so it's a Canadian comic, right?
Right.
And so a lot of the locations are in, it's in Toronto and the locations, and they use loonies and the funny money and all of that. And generally, if you were to take something like that and make it a big screen thing, generally they would then Americanize it. And they didn't do any of that. And I love that they didn't do that. Because, again, that's that quirkiness. That's that real feel of it for me. And I really do appreciate that they didn't do that. I wonder if for the mundanes, if like that made it a little too, not just like that was the thing that made it too weird, but that was just another thing that kind of made it a little weird for them to feel comfortable watching, you know, along with the video game stuff and the comic book stuff and the all of the other weird things.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird in it, not just with all the graphics, like when a phone ring, it says ring beside it, without all that quirkiness and the story itself, which is kind of odd and bizarre. But there were just other quirky aspects to the characters, like the fact that they have a big communal bed in the middle of the, as soon as you walk in the apartment, it's just there and people are sleeping there. And, things like that, that were a little odd. What I will say is that I felt as though the movie did not do a great job of explaining the League of Evil Exes. And I guess for those people that haven't seen Scott Pilgrim, first of all, we're going to spoil the heck out of it. But you need to understand that the general idea here is that Scott meets a girl, girl of his dreams, or so he thinks. He wants to date her. They start dating. And then he finds out that she has 7 evil exes and he must battle them and defeat them in order to continue to date her. But I don't feel as though they do as good of a job with that as they could have in the film. And the clip number one, now I had some technical difficulties today, so Nuchas is in charge of sound files. So the first clip that we have is a clip of when Scott first starts dating her and he gets this email. So go ahead and play that one.
Wallace, how do you do that?
Wallace!
Amazon.ca, what's the website for that?
Amazon.ca.
I have to order something really cool.
You've got mail.
Dude, this thing claims I have mail.
It's amazing what we can do with computers these days.
Dude, now I'm reading it.
So happy for you.
Dear Mr. Pilgrim, it has come to my attention that we will be fighting soon. My name is Matthew Patel and blah, 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 blah. Fair warning. Mono y mono, 7 evil, blah, blah.
What?
This is boring. Delete.
So, that obviously explains that he's going to have to fight this guy, but it doesn't explain, like, the fact that there are 7 that he has to fight in a row. And I know part of that becomes uncovered in the movie, but I felt as though if they would have set that up at the beginning, then maybe more people would have understood what was happening here and realized what this was, more of a, you know, video game type movie where you have the whole fighting aspect and everything, you know. And I just felt that they could have done a little bit better job with that. But that, you know, but the thing is, if you kind of do a Google search before you go and kind of get an idea of what's going on, I guess you can just jump right in, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. It's also like kind of a weird setup of like, well, why? Why do I have to fight these people? Why is it like it takes so long for you to figure out what happened? You know, that basically the first got on a drunken rant and he found all of her exes and they teamed up to be jerks to try to control her life. But it's like, why does she put up with that? Why is this a thing, you know?
Yeah, and they never, I don't feel as though they ever fully explain, even when we find out the person who was in charge of that, like what his, you know, obviously his game plan was just to make her life complicated, but it's like some of the people that he's fighting are people that, you know, like she dated in 7th grade for like, you know, a week, you know, and it's like, okay, well, I get that. But I mean, I do like the fight scenes were fantastic. I mean, they were just so well done.
They each have like their own like special powers and everything. So like if you wanted to go out and really speculate, you could think, okay, well, there's something special about her that having dated her, like, levels you up in some way. And, like, maybe that's why, you know, the guy she dated in when she was in grade school, you know, he can summon these demon hipster chicks and all this, and he's got mystical powers and all this other stuff. And he's like, well, okay, just because he dated her, or is she only drawn to people that have powers? I don't know.
Yeah, that was, and again, you know, it's like, this was the third time I watched this film. I saw it in a theater, and then I believe I picked the Blu-ray combo set up at Christmas time a couple years ago for like $5 or something. And I'm like, I want to see this movie again. And it has a great soundtrack as well. So I picked it up, and then I believe I watched it then. And then, you know, I sat down and watched it again. And then, of course, I you know, skimmed through it as I was pulling the audio clips that I wanted to get for the show. But it is, you know, it takes a couple watches to try to get all the different nuances. And the one thing that I feel is that people to watch is, I don't think that they give the actors enough credit for the characters that they pull off, because you have to go all in on these. You can't half-ass it. You have to go all in. Patel is the first boyfriend, right? That, and like when he comes in, you're like, okay. And then when he's like doing all the moves and everything and explaining who he is, and that shot of him with his hand raised up in the air where he's announcing who he is, and he's the first evil ex-boyfriend, man, that is like a perfect replicate of what is in the comic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just thought that they did that so well, and it was more natural. It wasn't like he was like stopping to pose, like where it seemed like it was forced. It was just all very smooth and very well done, you know. And the fight scenes, I mean, God, the budget, just, you can see where the budget went on the sets alone, because they're destroying them.
It's
just destruction everywhere. And with that being said, you know, of all the evil boyfriends we see Scott have to fight and defeat, which one did you like the best?
Oh, my favorite's Roxy, all the way.
Okay. Oh, okay. See, I thought the Brendan Rouse character was, I just loved him so much. He just did such a good job of playing somebody so freaking evil and mean looking. And that was a great, of course, that was like one of the longer fight scenes, but the whole thing with him being vegan and all that stuff was hilarious.
Oh, and it's like, oh, my vegan powers, you know, it gives me vegan powers, but he's like, not really vegan. Cheats on everything. And
and you know, the thing is there, and granted, you know, you could take it with a grain of salt, but I mean, there's a lot of really quick cuts and just, you know, prodding of the whole hipster culture. You know, one of my favorite scenes, and again, I didn't see it till the second time I watched the film, was when they go and see the band, who I cannot remember who the big band is. Wow, I'm horrible at that. I'm horrible at names. But they go and see her. They talk about them, and the female singer used to date Scott. And they go and see them, right? And young Neil's there, and he's talking to Knives, and they're there. They've seen the band. They're still there, and they're sitting there, and she's like, wow, that was so great. He's like, yeah, you got to see him live. And I just started cracking up laughing. That's how everybody is. They're like, yeah, you got to see him live. And just like things like that, you know, it was so funny and so like kind of under the radar, you know, that I really enjoyed. I also
Is the band The Clash at Demon Head?
Yeah, that's it.
I wonder why you forgot it. It's not like...
It doesn't roll
it's
off
a
the
sentence.
Tongue. Yeah.
Because that's so hipster.
And I like the first time I saw the film, and they were like young Neil, and then what was the other guy's name? And they're clearly taken from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, you know? And I thought that was so, just another funny little thing, you know, that they did. And there's all kind of little jabs like that at the whole, you know, the whole hipster culture and what's going on, you know. It just made me laugh, like little things like that, like kind of like, I don't want to say they're in jokes, because they're not really, but they're just funny little things they throw in there. And I don't think that they do it with disrespect or that they're mocking that. I just think that they were doing it because that is the point of, you know, this kind of what this film is molded around, that whole culture. You know, you have people who are in their 20s who are rudderless and don't know what they're doing. And, you know, everybody's trying to make, you know, ends meet in a way that they're just, you know, they do the bare minimum for their living conditions. But, you know, they're willing to spend and go to concerts and stuff like that. And I just thought it was a really interesting take on it, you know. And Scott is somebody who's so darn likable, you know.
Yeah. Even though he's like kind of a jerk, you can't help but like him. It's really weird because normally, like, if you look at him on paper, that's the kind of guy I just want to kick his butt, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of dating a teenager and he's, you know, barely putting in an effort at his band and all this other stuff. And then he sees a pretty girl and everything else drops. And it sounds like, man, I don't like that kind of guy, but there's something about him that you can't help but see. Okay, he's likable. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
And when Michael Cera, like the one of the things that I felt that stands out to me, like Michael Cera throughout the film, I mean, he does have fight scenes where he does get loud and he yells, but for mostly the entire film, he's a very soft-spoken voice. And I'm not exactly sure how you can act like that, but he manages to do it, you know? He manages to pull that off, you know? And there's times when you actually feel bad for him because he doesn't, you know, you can tell he emotes enough that you can tell that this Ramona Flowers has really, you know, grabbed him. And he's like really does think that she is the girl of his dreams, you know?
Yeah. Well, and what I think is really interesting is so Michael Cera is really good at playing that awkward kid. Okay.
Right.
And yet he's not always playing the same awkward kid.
Yeah.
Like if you look at him in Arrested Development and Scott Pilgrim, they're two completely different characters, as is the character from, say, Juno or from Nick and Nora's Ultimate Playlist. I mean, if I were to compare Scott Pilgrim to any of his other roles, it'd be closer to Nick and Nora. But even then, they're completely different characters. And yet they're all still kind of awkward hipster types.
Yeah. And it's like in this, he has a little bit of like self-assurance, a small amount to get him through his day, but not like, you know, he's self-assured in what he's currently doing, but he has no direction. You know, he's just kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in a band. Everybody's in a band, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that, you know? So you have this, you know, you have this whole thing around this film, like all the tropes are there for, you know, this young rudderless group of people that you see. I mean, you see, it's not so much anymore as things get a little bit tougher, but you know, this is definitely, a whole lot of 90s in here. I felt, you know, a whole lot of late 90s kind of thing where you had that, you know, not to group people together, but that's kind of how it was. You had people that were in college that were just kind of wandering around, you know, nobody was like, man, there was no get up and go. Nobody had any drive. You know?
Well, I mean, and even for those of us that did have drive, I mean, there was still this feeling of like just getting by and stealing these moments of happiness kind of a deal. You know, it's like you work to pay your bills and you get just enough to pay your bills so that you can actually enjoy part of your day. And I think that that's kind of a universal feeling, definitely for people, you know, in their early 20s. I mean, everyone at some point is just like, you know, everything can't be work. So we all kind of focus for a little bit of trying to explore that world out there and figure out what are we going to do? What do I actually like doing? You know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah. And this movie focuses on his moments of happiness. You know, that's what's different. I think that's one of the things that makes the film different than other films of this type is that it doesn't focus on the negative day-to-day things to get through the day, but it rather focuses on the personal moments of happiness, but also personal moments of, I guess, I don't want to say tragedy, but complications. Like he has to fight these boyfriends. Does he want to do that? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and if you think about it, like, again, as I said, on paper, you know, he's this 20-something-year-old guy dating a teenager. But if you look at that, it's, why was he dating a teenager? Because she adored him. And it felt good to have somebody adore him. It didn't make him happy, but it made him feel good, which is, you know, a little bit of a difference. And then he meets Ramona and suddenly is like, wait a minute, there might be happiness out there. So it's more along the lines of, you know, him realizing, okay, that relationship is just a Band-Aid, me trying to make myself feel better. I need to actually go for something tangible, because he was never really invested in what's her name, Knives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was more somebody that he can control to a certain extent, yeah. You know.
Well, just somebody that makes him feel good, you know, his own personal cheerleader, which yeah. is, you know, as we say it, it's absolutely horrible to Knives. But yeah, that's definitely his motivation there.
Okay, the second sound clip, if I have this marked right, and I may or may not, I believe this is the first boyfriend battle. So go ahead and play that one. It's long, and there's a little, might be a little bit of stuff in before and bit after. I didn't do an exact trimming of the clip. I thought I could do that post, but that did not work out. But just play it. People will live with it. It's all good.
Well, well, well. You're quite the opponent, Pilgrim.
Who the hell are you anyway?
My name is Matthew Patel, and I'm Ramona's first evil ex-boyfriend.
For what? Anyone need another drink? Wait! We're fighting over Ramona?
Didn't you get my email explaining the situation?
I skimmed it.
Mm-mm.
You will pay for your insolence!
Okay, so that was
that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of not a whole lot of talking, but a whole lot of hitting going on. But I just like the fact when he's like, "Didn't you get my email?"
Yeah, skimmed it.
But that was a, you know, that's when you first you get that. I mean, you have like all the graphics, like when the band's playing, you have a little lightning bolts of sound coming out and everything, and you have, so you know, you have this little quirkiness, comic bookiness to this film. But it's not until you get to this first fight where you're like, what the heck is going on? And it's like, oh, okay, it's all starting to come together and make sense. And just like out of nowhere, he has all these fighting abilities, and you're like, well, if you're this tough, if you've never seen this movie before, you'd be kind of a little bit lost. You'd be like, if you have this much ability, then you should have more self-confidence. But then you realize, oh, it's a whole video game thing, you know, leveling mm-hmm. up and getting points and things like that. Then it all starts to come together and kind of make sense, you know, that the whole game is defeating the seven evil exes.
Well, and I think the first like serious laugh out loud bit for me there is when he explodes into coins.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I wasn't expecting that, and when you see that on the big screen, I mean, it's one thing to see something like that in a comic or a video game, and then you see it on the big screen with live action, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened. And then he's just all, you know, ooh, bus fare.
yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that, you know, you look at all these little things, and you understand now why the production budget was, in fact, as high as it was, because.
Yeah.
You know, you have all this stuff going. I mean, not only do you have the sets, but also, you know, all the CGI that it takes to, you know, make them explode into coins, to add all the graphics after the fact, you know, all the different CGI effects, you know, like when the phone rings and things like that. And it just, it really makes, they took time to pay attention to these details. And that's what really makes the film work for me.
It's a very pretty film.
Yeah.
Like it, for a bunch of dirty 20 somethings, it's a very pretty film. So I think that really, you know, shows how much that they put towards like art direction. And whenever I watch it, it's, you know, it's visually pleasing, but it also, I always just feel good when I watch this movie. Like I can't tell you how many times I've seen this movie, because it's one of those movies I put on when I just want to feel good. You know, when I want something good that I've seen before.
Yeah, and you can't beat the soundtrack. I mean, there's
my gosh, just, the soundtrack, you know, is so great.
There's so many good songs on there. I was about to say
it's kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy for me, that if I'd want to cheer myself up or just feel happy, I put that on, and that too has an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but considering that the soundtrack for this is more You have Beck and stuff, but it's like Guardians of the Galaxy are like, you know, arena rock bands. But they did such a good job of putting it together and making it work. And this is one of the soundtracks that this and Guardians of the Galaxy both, as soon as I saw the film, I went and got the soundtrack right afterwards. I think with Scott Pilgrim, that was one of the first digital, the first times I bought. First time I bought one digitally, Guardians, I actually wanted the CD because I don't want the music to be compressed at all. But it's that kind of soundtrack that kind of, it's some of those songs just kind of stick in your head. You know, since I saw this movie again, I watched it, I think, Saturday night. I've been singing the garbage truck song and people just keep staring at me like I'm insane. But I just keep telling them how I want to be their garbage man. You know, what are you going to do? It just sticks in your head.
It's really funny because I know quite a few bands, and pretty much all of the musicians that I know absolutely love Scott Pilgrim because they say that's what it feels like. Being in a band, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think that's a very good description. You know, it does, you know, visually that is, you know, when they're playing and like, they're doing this battle and Scott stomps on the pedal and really picks it up, you know, and starts going to town, you know. You know, it's funny, I was looking at the different trivia facts for this, and I didn't realize that apparently Michael Cera is pretty darn good on the bass, and he had to downplay his ability because nobody else knew how to play anything, and they had to learn how to play instruments before they did the film, and he had to really downplay his ability because he was so good at it.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty. Just I like little things like that you didn't know about.
Yeah, I love that. Totally tangential and off topic, but in the show Gilmore Girls, one of the side characters starts a band, and the actress, as the character is learning to play the drums, is learning to play the drums. So the entire time that you see her play the drums, it's always that actress and that actress's actual ability. So as the character learned, the actress learned, and by the end, like, she became really, really good. And it just made me laugh that, you know, I was like, I love stuff like that when you get the real talent mixed in with the actor. I really dig that.
And since you started this tangent, did you watch the latest season of Gilmore Girls on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, now I have something I have to say. I'm trying to decide whether everybody, if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, don't listen for the next 20 seconds. Okay, and starting now. So anyway, what the hell did they do to What's-Her-Name's character? She's like a bubbling idiot now. She like slept around with a bunch of different guys, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? I mean, they completely ruined that character.
Yeah, she's completely listless. I have a lot to say about the reunion. Or the revival. There's a lot that I liked and a lot that I didn't like. But yeah. Well, but the other thing is, if you go back and you rewatch that character you were talking about, is because we're past 20 seconds.
Yeah.
that character is not as wonderful as you thought she was. But
it seemed really off character. And then you get that final, that cliffhanger. I didn't realize there was going to be another season. I'm like, well, there's got to be one now.
Well, I don't know that there is, because those last four words are supposed to be the last four words that the series was supposed to end on originally.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Amy Sherman-Palladino wanted to make everything come full circle with those last four words.
I will say they haven't lost the magic of the dialogue
show. It was great.
That's the reason I ever watched that show, because the dialogue and the frenetic pace it goes at, and they're able to pull that together, is one. I'm just mystified. I could sit there and watch it, you know, and it's
their scripts were like 96 pages, where a normal script is, you know, like, going to be like 60 pages.
Yeah, each episode has a story. It's definitely a dialogue driven type of show. But man, it was I just actually watched the last three episodes of the final season because my wife and I were going to watch together. Then I came from work one day and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm watching the Gilmore Girls. And I'm like, well, I thought this was going to be a togetherness thing. And she's like, really hasn't been that good. And my wife is not a TV watcher. So I was like, okay. So I took a shower and I sat down, and she's like, there's two more episodes. And I'm like, we can do this. So we stayed up real late and finished watching it. And then I'm like, and then we get to that final scene. And I'm like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
You know,
you really end up hating that character, which is that I totally love even more, the grandma though.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Her arc in the revival is fantastic.
Yeah, that's kind of how, like, as you get older, you're just like, to heck with things. This is what I'm going to do. And
that whole
deal with the Historic Association and that young girl coming in, I was just cracking up laughing. I'm like, oh, I knew it was coming. I was like, I can't wait. And then she goes off, and I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. Just so well done.
That's been
Gilmore Girls Corner here on Sci-Fi Dig. But, hey, I like rat holes, so, you know, it's what connects us all.
Back to Scott Pilgrim.
yes, back to Scott
Pilgrim. But, yeah, so, like, I love when you find out that you know, like an actor can actually play an instrument or something.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it Will Ferrell that's constantly working in musical instruments because he can play stuff? Or like when Steve Martin would play the banjo or guitar in one of his films.
Yeah, you think he just rehearsed for that little bit or whatever. Then you find out later on that, you know, this person actually does this a lot, and this is their hobby, and you know, their first love was music, or their first love was whatever it is that they happen to have an ability to do, and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, you know.
Or like when they had to get John Travolta to dance badly in Primary Colors, I think was the name of the movie. They had to play different music.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more clip, and
okay.
I am not exactly sure what it is. The notation I have makes no sense. So go ahead and play that, and then we'll talk about it. How about that?
All right. Let's see what it is.
So, what was all that all about?
Guess if we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my 7 evil exes.
You have 7 evil ex boyfriends?
7 evil exes, yes.
And I have to fight
defeat
your 7 evil exes if we're going to continue to date?
Pretty much.
So what you're saying right now is we are dating?
I guess.
Does that mean we can make out?
Sure.
Cool.
I remember now that the my point of the three clips was that that's over a span of like 40 minutes in the film before we finally get the whole story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like I said, that was my, I mean, like I kind of knew what was going on going in. So I kind of enjoyed the pacing of that. But for somebody, to me, it helps to kind of explain why the film didn't do well, because people went in and was like, what is going on? And then by the time you figure it out, half the film's over and you've kind of limited your enjoyment because you're spending your time racking your brain trying to figure out what is the point of all this. Where I felt if they would explain that a little bit better in the beginning. And also, the comic does a really good job right off the bat of letting you know this is a really quirky thing, because in the comic, he meets Ramona in his daydream because she's taking a shortcut through his mind to deliver a package. And when you read those lines, you're like, what? Then you're like, oh, okay, I get it, you know, and you realize it's going to be a quirky little thing.
Yeah, and that again goes to like the further, well, okay, there's something different about this girl because she's got the ability to travel through space and time and use people's daydreams to be a shortcut.
Yeah, and I don't feel as though that they really cover that very well right off the bat, and I think that might be some of the reason the film didn't do well. I will say that you can see that, my God, that the last fight scene between the, you know, not only the last ex, but also the person behind, you know, the League of Evil Exes, that last fight scene, which is like 10 minutes long and has so many different things come together, it pulls everything together. So, you know, everything we've seen up till now, the budget on that, I can only imagine there's just so much stuff going on. But I like when he walks in and Sex Bomb's playing, and they replaced him with young Neil. And, you know, the first time she's like, because he gets a one-up and he can do it all over again. But the first time he goes to fight the guy, and the guy tells him to play, and she's in the I think it's Kimberly on drums, and she's like flipping him off, and she's like, "We're here to sell out and sell stuff." And yeah. then the next time when he does the one up and comes back and does it again, and she's like, and when she's like, we're here to watch Scott Pilgrim kick your teeth in. And I just thought it was just so well done. And you come to the, not only the end with the league, but where Scott comes clean with himself and his faults and the things that he's done in the past, and makes, well, it doesn't really make amends. He just apologizes to everybody and it's all good, you know?
Yeah. No, all he has to do is say he's sorry, and there you go.
And then you just like the little guy that much more, because you're just like, ah, that was cool. You know, it took you all this time to figure it out, but at least you straightened up. And then the fight scene between with him and Knives against the last Evil X, and they were just kind of like reenacting the video game. That whole montage of them kicking him and the way they put it on the screen in the different shapes, you know, as they're kicking him in the face and stuff. Man, I thought that was just so well put together and just fit perfectly in this film, you know. Yeah. They did a great job with bringing everything together to make it, you know, I think this is like one of those true comic book films in the way that The Rocketeer was a comic film.
Yes.
This is the same thing. You know what you're watching. You know you're watching a comic film, but it's like all those little touches that make it happen. You could do the same film, you know, without
that
stuff.
They didn't dumb it down to make it appeal to audiences. They wrote and created this for comic fans. And, you know, so many people, you know, outside of comics, they think comic books, that's all superheroes. And they don't realize the vast, you know, spread and spectrum of different types of comics that there are out there. And this kind of a thing is very comic booky, but not what people on the outside think of when they think of comics. And they didn't, I think, like you said, the shortfall is that they didn't really explain a lot, but at the same time, they didn't explain a lot because they were making it for comic fans. They weren't making it for people that don't read comics. And I think that's one of the reasons why, for me personally, this is a successful film. But that's also the reason why financially it's not as successful.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think that the financially, it just I think it needed a little bit of help with explanation. And I think people forget that comics is a medium. So rather than, you know, people don't understand that, man, if you like, I don't want to read comics. It's like, if you take 5 minutes and do a little research and see what's out there in the comic book world, I think you change your tune, because, man, you think of anything and there's a comic about it. You know, I mean, there's just so much stuff available across so many different topics, fiction and nonfiction, you know, and I don't think people give it a chance. And like me, like, man, I have been on a comic kick the last like year, especially. I mean, I've just been on a tear of like reading so much different stuff, and it's just one of those things. And when you find something that, usually what happens is I get burnout. I start reading, and then at some point it switches and I start trying to keep up with an arc as opposed to, or with a certain book, as opposed to reading what I feel. And I have enough comics in my digital collection now, because I buy them when they're on sale. So I end up having a whole bunch of stuff I haven't read that I can hop around. It keeps me, you know, much more satisfied. And, but it is just, you know, I feel bad for people that don't take the time to read comic books. I mean, just pick one up and read it and just see what it's all about. There's just so much different stuff out there. And it is, I love sci-fi on TV, and it's what started me doing this show, because there's nobody else around me that loves sci-fi like I did. But with comics, there's plenty of comic readers out there, but there's so many different titles, different publishers, so many different things where, you know, for the longest time, sci-fi, you only had like a dozen shows on any given time. Of course, that has exploded now, but you know, it was always like, so like, you know, I talked about comics to try to pick out something that I might like and try to recommend to people. But, you know, it's just, you listen to any comic podcast and you're going to hear something you don't know about or you haven't read yet. And then you just like, you add it to your list, and then hopefully you live to be 300 years old and you can read everything. That's what it boils down to. You know.
Pretty much. I do know that there are some people that like literally cannot read comics because they don't know how to follow the cell format. Like, I've seen people trying to figure something out and they're like, I don't understand what's going on. I'm like, well, you read this one, this panel, and then this panel and this. And I show them how the movement, like I have to actually show them how the story is moving. because they can't grasp that. And it baffles me because I don't understand how that's possible. Like, yeah, it's baffling. Pretty intuitive to me, but there are some people that literally cannot. And if that's the case, don't read comics. It's not for you. But like you said, it's a medium and there's so many different kinds of comics that you really owe it to yourself to explore and to go out there and see what there is. It's like when people say, oh, I don't like anime. Well, what anime don't you like? You do realize anime is more than just Sailor Moon and Gundam, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. it's a huge medium. And to say that you don't like it because you've seen one or two things, I mean, that'd be like me saying, oh, I don't like live action. They're all soap operas.
Right, exactly.
It's baffling to me sometimes to see people just completely discount an entire medium. But then again, we see people discount entire genres. I'm in a book club right now, and we're reading this book called The Underground Railroad. And it's a historical fiction, right? And right. So one of the readers is like, well, okay, so in this book, what they do is the Underground Railroad is an actual train. It's a railroad with underground tunnels and stuff. And so one of the people was, you know, pretty upset and just like, well, I did some more research. I wasn't understanding this whole making it an actual train thing. And then I read this article. Apparently, this is called speculative fiction. And well, I guess I don't like speculative fiction, so I'm not going to read any. And I'm like, okay. Almost all of literature is speculative fiction.
Yeah, exactly. You can't. Exactly.
So I started citing all of these different novels that I knew this person liked. Like, you can't say that you don't like speculative fiction because it's basically what if. That's all speculative fiction is. And it was so frustrating to me to see somebody just discount an entire, you know, the majority of fiction. But it's one of those things. It's like, well, I don't read sci-fi. Well, how do you know? There's so much sci-fi out there. How do you know there's something you're not going to like?
Yeah, I've never really loved the term speculative fiction because everything is, but I understand you can't find. That's why I've always used it. I haven't used the term science fiction. I use sci-fi and sci-fi related because mm-hmm. I think horror would fall into that. I think that fantasy kind of falls into that, you know. So I understand when people use speculative fiction, but isn't all fiction speculative? I mean,
exactly. And it's like, well, it's I've also heard the term genre fiction. And it's like, well, okay, so that's anything that's not in the literature section. But even then, there's a lot of stuff in the literature section that is genre fiction. And when you start getting into like genres and stuff like that, it gets very confusing. And if you say sci-fi, people think only science fiction, and then they don't think you're talking about horror or fantasy. And
yeah,
oh, it's such a big kerfuffle.
It's too hard to try to trying to explain what. Yeah. You know, and I just kind of give up a while back and I just say, okay, well, this is kind of similar to this.
Yeah.
You know, and hope for the best.
If
you
like this, you will like this.
Yeah. Kind of like, like, you know, you try to find like an author or something they can relate mm-hmm. to and connect to and do that. Okay. With that being said, let's rate this puppy. Now we do the Netflix rating, which is, what is Netflix 4 stars or 5 stars? I want to say it's 5 stars, but then I always think it's 4 stars. I don't know why that happens to me.
And
No,
oh,
there's
Netflix,
no 10.
Netflix. Yeah, Netflix, no, that's IMDb
so
is
it's
10.
Like, one,
Netflix
I hated it.
Netflix is 5.
Okay, one, I hated it. 2, 3, good. 4, great. 5, the best ever. And it's a personal rating. And none of that half-star nonsense. I got pigeonholed by Patrick last week because he gave it like a 4 point something. And then I was like, man, this is like a 4.5, but I can't say it. I can't say 4.5 because I'm breaking my own rules. So I just had to go with 5. And I know it's probably for most people, it's probably more of a 4, but I'm like, really? When I watched Bubba Hotep again, that film just spoke to me. I don't know what it was. It must be my age. And I'm like, this was a great movie.
Well, so. I can tell you what it is rated on my Netflix as is 5 stars. Because I love it. It's like I said, it's one of those movies that I just go to because I want to feel good. And you know, it's not like a feel good movie. It's a movie that I feel good watching. Right. And it just makes me happy. So 5 stars. Yeah. Absolutely.
I myself am going to give it 4 stars. I love the soundtrack of this film. If you haven't given the soundtrack a try, please do so. If you want the whole soundtrack, however, I think that you're going to have to buy it, because I believe like Spotify and a couple of other services don't include a couple of the songs. Probably because I don't know why, which is weird, because one of the songs on the soundtrack, it's the song, I can't remember the name of the song. It's the song that the woman sings, and it's not included on Spotify if you try to listen to the soundtrack, but you can look the song up by that band on Spotify. So I don't know how that works. It's some kind of weird rights thing, I'm sure, but, you should be able to find everything. Build your own soundtrack. The heck of it. You know, you got everything there. Just put it together. Make your own. You know, make your own.
It could be one of those things that, like, that's how they get you to buy the soundtrack. Kind of like that song from Karate Kid. The only way you can get it is if you buy the soundtrack.
Yeah, but on Spotify, you're just paying for the streaming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, you're paying anyway. It's just really weird the way that they have it set up.
Yeah, but that's probably why, like, the music company or the... people that own the rights are like, we don't want to give the whole soundtrack, because then people will just listen on Spotify.
Yeah. It's weird. The whole music thing is just, it's just so weird now, trying to figure things out and figure what goes where. And I'm like, I just want the album and want to listen to it, and I don't want to have to play this game. You know, it gets too complicated. So as we wind things up, I was going to have you give me 3 things, but you already talked about a book. So this is what I'm going to do. I have a short list here of questions I can ask you, and you're going to pick a number between 1 and 3, and it's going to correlate to one of these questions. Now you can pass and we can move on to something else, but this will be a fun thing. So between 1 and 3, pick a number.
3.
All right. So 3. Now this may or may not relate to you. I myself have a very beautiful pink backpack. That's right, it's pink. Deal with it, people. That I take to work every day. And I have crap in there that I take to work with me, because I might be there all day. Now, the reason I have a pink backpack is because it was my daughter's backpack, and I kind of was enamored with the backpack, the fact that how the pockets and everything. And I said, hey, whenever you get a new bag for school, I'm going to take that. To which she said, you can't do that. And I said, why can't I? I was like, it's a perfectly good backpack. It costs perfectly good dollars, and I need one that I can beat up and not care about. She's like, it's pink. And I was like, okay. I'm like, whatever. So she got a new backpack, and then for months, I kept saying, hey, what happened to that Under Armour backpack? I want that for work. I want that for work. So finally, she coughed it up. And then the funny thing was, is that because I have 2 children in college and everybody works, I had to walk to work on Wednesday. Not a big deal, because I work fairly close. It takes me like 10 minutes. So every Wednesday, I'd put on a pink backpack and I'd wear it to work. The first day I did it, as soon as I got to work, I texted her and said, man, I had like 5 people compliment my backpack today. And she's like, you did not wear that to work. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I wore it to work. So in my bag, I carry multiple items, you know, because I could be gone from home for a while, you know. And so my question is, what do you have in your bag right now?
Okay, so when I carry a bag, because sometimes I just grab stuff out of my bag and shove it into my coat pocket because I don't want to carry extra bags. But when I am carrying a bag, I have my Bluetooth headphones.
Check. Me too.
A USB cord and charger.
Check. Me too.
You know, wallet, checkbook, chapstick, pen, very important.
Yep.
And what else do I have in there?
Do you happen to have a battery backup for your phone?
Yes.
Check.
That's what I have.
Too.
I have my
battery. I knew you were going to have those things.
I got the Duracell ones that look like really big batteries. I got those at like Costco. And I have a microfiber cloth for my glasses and my clip-on shades for my glasses, because sun hurts eyes.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, sorry, I just remembered the squeezy in-ear defenders, like the earplugs to wear to concerts or ranges, because got to protect your ears. And yes, I am that old person that goes to concerts and sticks those things in my ears. But I'm going to tell you actually hear the music better that way.
Yeah.
Because it's not just loud, and it's not just like when I don't have them, I actually hear the noise of the monitors. Yeah. And then I put them in my ear and I can hear all of the instruments. So yes, I am that old person that does that, but it's actually making it better for me to hear the music now.
Yeah, I think the last time I went and saw Kiss, they had an opening band for them who had a very bizarre audio setup where the speakers, there was no kind of, it was just all directed toward the center. And I was mm-hmm. on the floor because, well, it was Kiss. And they played, and they were like three songs in, and my head hurt so bad. I'm like, I'd never heard anything like that. I'm like, ever since then, I always make sure if I go to a show, I don't always have to use them, but I always make sure that I have those foam. Because when Kiss played, I didn't have any problem.
Yeah.
It was just the way they had it set up. And it was like, man, I'm like, I must be getting old. I'm like, because, and of course, this was when I was in my 30s, you know, and I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, I'm like, my head is freaking pounding. My teeth were hurting. And I'm like, and I was like, I can't sit through a whole show like this. Well, then Kiss came out, and of course, they have a decent sound person. They had it set up so everybody could hear it, and it sounded a lot better. But yeah. And I also have all those items in my bag.
Just one other thing, it's actually also so much better when you're going to like a small venue. Because the sound is bouncing off of the walls.
Right, right.
And it actually distorts the sound. So, like, if you're going to a bar to see a live show, it's even better than when you go to, like, a big concert.
Yeah, I think it filters out the real highs, and it makes it much more enjoyable, you know. And, again, also, you might want to use your ears for something else one day, so it might be a good idea to take care of them, you know.
Yep.
Okay.
So what else do you have?
So I have all those things you mentioned. I have a battery charger and all that. And then, of course, you know, I'm very particular about what I eat. Those of you that have followed me since I stopped doing the podcast, initially when my daughter was born, I weighed 300 pounds. And I realized that at the rate I was going that I would be dead before she graduated high school. And so I didn't want to be dead. So, I mean, my God, I want to give my grandkids a bunch of candy and send them back to her. I mean, it's part of my revenge scheme. So I had to live long enough for that. So I had started walking, and then I had started from there that I started running, and I was in fairly good shape. And then I had the little mishap when I was we were on vacation in Tennessee and my bowel burst. I did not know that that happened until 3 days later, and I had to have emergency surgery. And then ever since then, I've been very particular about things. And now I'm probably, I don't think I've weighed this weight since I was in middle school. So I do, you know, I try to do between 5 and 8 miles a day running, with the exception of Saturday and Sunday, where I force myself to walk, which is a lot harder than you think, to rest my legs. So I try to make sure that I have ready food available so that if I do get hungry, I'm not eating something horrible for me. So I always have a couple protein bars that I'm very particular about which ones I get. They have to be low in carbs and high in protein.
Which brand do you go?
The two brands that I use the Simple Truth brand, which Kroger carries. And mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my Kroger stopped carrying them, so I have to drive to the other one. I buy them by the box. They're like six in a box. They're also relatively inexpensive, like 79 cents. That's like dirt cheap.
Yeah.
And they have like 21 grams of protein. And the other one, I get the Think Thin peanut butter ones. They're 240 calories, and you have, I think it's 21 or 22 grams of protein. And they're very filling. And they also, if you have a sweet tooth, it curbs that. My problem is I have a sweet tooth. All my teeth are sweet. I just want to eat. I've never met cookie I didn't like. That's my problem.
Have you tried the Quake bars?
Quake.
Yeah.
I may have, because Rhiannon has tried some bars, because she talks to some different people and they trade protein, and she's always trying these different bars, and then she's like, she does something, takes a bite, makes a face like she just ate poop, and then says to me promptly thereafter, here, taste this.
Yeah, try this.
And then I'm like, no. And she's like, no, it's good. And I'm like, no, it's not. You're lying to me. And so I just tend to stay away from her whenever she opens one, because I know she's setting me up. I don't think I've had the Quake, though.
My sister, when she was training for her marathon, turned me on to that. And the only time that I actually need like a bar is if I'm going to a Kenshu. That's a 3-day martial arts seminar. And okay.
Yeah,
then
I can
see
how that could be handy.
Serious stuff. But like for normal day-to-day stuff, like if I need energy and protein, I The only, I try to stay away from anything that's like processed. So the only like granola bars that I actually grab are those old school Nature Valley oat ones that look like cardboard and it's just compressed oats. And then I throw peanut butter on that and then I run out of the house with that.
That
to me is like my thing because I need, that'll give me the carbs and the protein that I need to just go. I find that so many of the bars, they just, they really do taste bad.
Yeah, you have to find the one that you like, and you have to find the one that fits your needs. And like for me, I go with low carbs and high protein.
Yeah.
So I kind of stay away from granola, but let me tell you, I've never met a granola bar I didn't like. I mean, there's a lot of things I've never met that I didn't like, but I just have to, it's really, I eat a lot of grilled chicken. Everybody makes fun of me at work because like I come like at least twice a week, I'll buy 10 pounds of chicken and chicken breast and I grill it up. And that's when they're like, what do you do with that? I'm like, I eat it. They're like, right now? And I'm like, well, no, I'd probably die if I ate that. But like during the week, I portion it out and that's what I eat. You know, as long as I'm on a diet and watching what I eat and watching my intake, that's what I take. So I always like to have something in case I get hungry real quick and I don't make a bad decision. So I always take a protein bar, maybe two. Sometimes I throw them in my bag every day and I forget about it and then open my bag one day and there's like eight in there, you know, and I gotta weed them out.
Because you keep throwing them in not realizing you haven't eaten them.
I also carry one or two packs of tuna, that the little packs you rip open just in case, and multiple pens. I actually carry about four comic books in my bag at any given time in case I have time to read. And if it's a day that I know things are going to be kind of slow at the end of the day and I'm going to have everything done, I'm going to be standing around for like a half hour, I bring my iPad because I have comics on there as well. So I still
My phone has replaced carrying comics and carrying books.
Yeah.
Because if I can't find something on like Kindle or iBooks or whatever, I'm actually kind of sad because I don't like having to carry, like my phone is just so much lighter. And I can make the font whatever size I want it to be.
It's backlit. To me, it's the backlighting that sells everything.
Oh, you know, I love the backlighting. Yeah. Because I can read in bed and not bug my husband with a light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can stand on, if you're reading a book and you're like, you're standing in line or you're waiting on somebody, you can just pull it up real quick. And like I've gone basically all digital with everything except for films, because the quality I get streaming is nowhere near what I get in a Blu-ray, and also because of the price difference. Because why would I pay the same amount of money for a digital file as I can buy a Blu-ray DVD digital file combo? So I just buy the combo. You know, I mean, it's just easier. You know,
and I like the theaters up here in Canada. They've started doing this thing. It's kind of neat. If you go see a movie at the theater, you take your ticket stub and you put your ticket stub into their website, and when you can buy the movie then. So as soon as the movie is going to come out, you'll get sent a digital file, and then they'll ship you the Blu-ray when they press it. So you'll actually get the digital file before the Blu-rays are on the shelves.
What's the cost on that?
It ends up being like you end up getting, I think it's like something like $3 or $5 off what you would normally pay, like the suggested retail value.
Well, that's freaking brilliant.
Because they're like, well, you've seen the movie in theater, so we know you've already spent money on it, and we'll give you a discount, and then you get the movie early.
Yeah, I'm down with that. That'd be awesome if they did that here. I mean, you know, because like I said, like I'm trying to slowly move, like I have a lot of Blu-rays and DVDs, and it's not not as much as like a lot of people. Like, I don't buy everything. I only buy things I think I'm going to watch again. Or if we're looking for a particular film, and it's like I can find you, like, well, you can buy this on Amazon for the digital file for $14, or I can go and buy the DVD for $5. I'm going to buy the DVD for $5. And then what happens is we watch it. I know I'm never going to watch it again, but I've already bought it, so I just throw it in a box. And
it's cheaper than renting.
Yeah. And then what happens is after a while, I gather up all the movies and I'm not going to watch again. I take them to work and I'm like, who wants these? And I try to give them away. You know what I mean? But, you know, when it comes to like even some of the newer films that have come out, it's like I've kind of sat waiting because I'm like, I don't want to watch it right now. I have a bunch of things to watch. And then when they get dirt cheap, then I'll go and I'll pick them up. You know what I mean? And and then that's how you, but I try to make sure it's stuff I'm going to watch again, you know, that I know that I'll sit down and watch again. Of course, by the time you get a whole season or a whole series or something, it ends up being on Netflix or something, you're just like, darn it. I spent all that money on that.
Yeah. Well, it's like I have all of the Buffy and the Angel, but if I'm going to watch them, I end up just doing it on Netflix because it's easier. Yeah. Although Supernatural, first couple seasons, I don't because Netflix doesn't have the right music.
Oh, really?
That's important. Yeah.
Yeah, that is important.
Yeah, the first couple seasons, they don't have the rights. Like, because they secured the rights for DVD. They thought ahead for that. But they didn't think ahead for streaming. So they had to replace the songs. What is it? There's a couple of things like that. And they're all from, like, the CW and the WB.
Yeah.
But, like, Roswell doesn't have its iconic song. Dawson's Creek doesn't have it. On the DVD, Dawson's Creek doesn't have its iconic song.
Oh.
The Sarah McLachlan song. It's horrible and so frustrating. But for Supernatural, it's really important to me to get the right music.
Yeah, that was a selling point of that show. You know,
yeah.
I haven't. It's funny. I watched season 6 of Supernatural and then I tapped out. I'm like, I'm out. I couldn't take it.
Anything past 5 is fan fiction. And once you can view it that way, once you realize, okay, this is just fan fiction, it's easier to push past like the bad stuff, like the whole Leviathan season. That's horrible. It's just horrible. But there are some really, I'm going to be doing this. I keep saying I'm going to do this and I never sit down and do it. I'm going to write a cheat sheet of all of the great episodes after season 5 so that if anybody just wants to see the good stuff, they can skip all the other stuff.
Yeah. I guess like the thing that bothers me.
You'd like the musical episode.
Yeah, I probably would. And I the thing, you know, what kills me is like some of those seasons are up now on Blu-ray for like $10 on Amazon. And I was thinking about picking them up. And I know that the majority of them are streaming on Netflix as well, too. But what kills me about Supernatural is that if they hadn't taken it past 5 seasons, that could have been one of those iconic shows.
Yep.
Instead, it's one of those iconic shows of what you shouldn't do, like The X-Files, when it went past its prime date.
But it's such a cash cow, like the amount of money that they make, because it's not just what's on the screen. If you want to see any of the actors at a convention, you have to go to a Supernatural convention.
Oh yeah.
And they can't go to Dragon Con or Comic Con, or like your local con. They can only go to one of those specific events, and it's just all cash. There's such cash cows. They will never have to worry about money.
It's just, but it's like from a story perspective, it's just, And I get that. I get why they do what they do. And I'm not trying to, you know, knock anybody for making a living, but it's just like it comes from a point of like, you're telling a great story that anybody can connect to you're just kind of like beating a dead horse at some point. Mm-hmm. Now I'm probably not being fair because I've only seen season six. And I think season 7 is the Leviathan season, right?
I think that season 7. Yeah,
I think I watched like 3/4 of that maybe, and then I stopped watching. So season 7 where I quit, and then I have friends that tell me, "Hey, season 8 and 9 starts to get good," and I'm like, "I don't know if I could jump."
Yeah, but then there's also some bad stuff. So I mean, like I said, I'll eventually make that list and I will publish it. So if you just want to see the good stuff, you can just check out a Leviathan and check out of all the bad angst. And just watch the really good stuff, like when they go to Oz and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I might have to flip through and see what's there. And you know, it's like, and I try to save like the series that I know are going to be, have Blu-ray or special editions before I purchase them. Like I'm not a knee-jerk purchaser. The only thing there's a couple things that I'll purchase. You know, like some of the comic book movies as soon as they come out, a lot of them, about 80% of them, I'll buy when they first get released because I want to revisit that. And then I've learned that, well, if I just wait a couple months, they go from like $25 to $10 and then I could buy them.
Yeah.
Same thing with like The Flash. Like I buy The Flash is one of my favorite shows on TV. It's like I bought season 1 for $19 at Christmas time. Season 2 is now down to $17. I'm getting ready to pick that up because I know I'm going to go back and rewatch it. And besides that, I want to watch all the special features and, I love all that stuff. But you know, I try to be more try to watch what. Like I said, I just did a giant purge, 3 weeks ago when we had to clean the basement, and I'm like, we have so much stuff that
getting rid of stuff is such a big deal, and I like the availability of streaming because I don't have to have as much stuff. The only thing that is that I really miss is those special features. Like, I wish I could stream the special features.
Well, the streaming, the thing about the streaming that's becoming, that's making it more attractive to me is with Amazon and with now with Netflix, you can download it. And therefore, you get a better quality, and then
you can also get different definitions. So, like, I'm not sure how it is in the States, but I'm pretty sure it's similar. You can get standard definition, high definition, and ultra high, and then you can choose how many screens at one time on your account can be viewing, which is really helpful. So, like, I've got the high definition two viewer package.
Yeah.
But I could make it like my sister, she's got the 5-viewer package so that she can watch, her daughter can watch, and my mom can watch, all at the same time if they want to. And I love the different options that they've come out with.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're actually sending out HD is awesome.
Yeah. And the ability to download is a game changer, because if you have crappy internet, at least you can, and like, I just, you know, like, well, I had crappy internet, and then I was able to upgrade a little bit. It's still not the greatest internet, but it's good enough for me. I don't care. But, like, I had crappy enough internet that if I wanted to watch something, what I was doing is I was, like, going on Amazon, because they're the first one to have downloadability, and I'd download 3 episodes of something, then I just span it to my Apple TV, and that way there was no hiccups during the playback. And I love being able to do that. And if you could do that more, like, on your TVs and stuff like that, then it'd be more attractive to me to be able to watch, because it's just come to, they're slowly getting their act together and making it ease of use, and it's worth the money you pay. You know, it's like Comixology. It's like, I don't want to pay $3 for a digital comic, but it's just so gosh darn easy to go and click and get it, you know?
Yeah.
The same thing with music. It's just so easy. They're slowly working their way through. The thing is like, you get Comixology and you have an app on, well, unless you have a Windows device, you have an app everywhere so you can watch it. If you get, you know, like with, you know, all the different people who are selling content, you know, like if I get iTunes, I can't watch it on, you know, there's certain things you can't watch iTunes on. I can't watch it on my DVD player. But I can watch, you know, I can watch Amazon on there. I can watch Amazon almost anywhere. So you got to think about where you're going to purchase it, because you want to make sure you watch it everywhere. And they make it too complicated. It doesn't need to be that complicated. It's just like,
it's just a little frustrating that Apple really wants you to use their Apple TV, and they don't have. I think that they would really be helping themselves if they had like the little app that went on your smart TV.
Yeah, I don't disagree. They could have an iTunes app. I mean, I will say that the Apple TV is probably the easiest to use device that I have. And I have an Xbox and a PlayStation and a computer, and it's just, but my thing is like, how about the companies just give us a code that's good across the board?
Yeah, you exactly. Know what I mean? Well, I mean, like, I've got a Roku TV. I don't need an Apple TV.
Right. Yeah. That's yeah. You know? Well, that's the other thing too, is like, when I make sure if I buy devices, I don't get a smart TV. I get a separate device. That way, if that something happens, I still have one of the other.
Well, I can still plug in a Chromecast, and if I wanted an Apple TV, I could plug in an Apple TV.
Yeah.
I'm actually not getting Apple TV out of spite, because I don't like the way that Apple is doing this stuff, and the fact that I buy things on iTunes and I can't just stream it, so I'll just plug in my DV cord.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. And like, it's the thing that Apple had going for them was the fact that you could download the stuff, but now that other people are having that option, but for the longest time, Apple had the best quality, because everything else would be according to your internet speed. And I was only pulling like 3 megabits down. So my best bet if I bought something digital was buy it on Apple, download it, and then watch it there, and I could get the full HD effect. You know?
And Apple's also cool because you can decide if you want standard or HD.
Right.
So like, if I want to watch because I'm a cord cutter. If I want to watch a TV show that I have to purchase, and I'm only going to watch that episode once, I'm just going to get the standard definition. But if I'm going to get a movie or something that I want to watch multiple times, I'm going to get the HD.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And the other thing is, sometimes I've found that sometimes Amazon is cheaper and sometimes Apple is cheaper and vice versa. And sometimes, and this is the weird thing, sometimes USA iTunes and Canadian iTunes, their prices actually don't match. And I'm not talking because the dollar is different. I'm talking with conversion.
Yeah.
One of them will be cheaper. So having both of those, I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy from this one today and this one for that one. And
You know, the other thing people don't think about too is like, YouTube sells movies as well.
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah.
And the quality, and like I tell people that, they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you can buy them on there, and you, again, you have, you get decent quality. A lot of times they have better prices than the others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, YouTube kind of universal, right? There's an app everywhere for that, so you can actually, you know, do whatever with that. But you know, it's slowly coming together, so they're making things a little bit easier. It's just like for me right now, the cheapest and best route is DVDs, but you have the clutter. It's nowhere near as nice and concise as being it. But when you think about the fact you might have 10 different accounts on 10 different services, that's not very concise either. That gets kind of confusing as well. But I am waiting for, you know, I think about what, you know, what's coming up that excites me, that's something that I would drop serious money on. TV wise, and there's still a rumor floating around that Deep Space Nine is going to get a Blu-ray release. Now, the only Star Trek that I have on disc is the original series Blu-ray, and then I have the Enterprise because they had a killer deal on that on Amazon UK. I think I got the entire series on Blu-ray for like $30, and nice. I couldn't pass it up.
Deep Space Nine, I don't know exactly. They've already had a bit of a cleanup done to their stuff because I was watching an episode on Netflix and it's I remember it when it aired live, and it's Worf and Ezri are in a jail cell, and on the Netflix version you can see everything, the entire set.
Yeah.
And my memory, I'm like, no, that was all dark. You could just see their faces. They're actually supposed to be in the dark, and you can see it's all grainy because they just threw it through a filter.
Yeah.
So it's not like real cleanup. But I did read an article saying that one of the problems with getting the other Star Trek remastered is that nobody buys them. And it's like, of course not, because you charge so much. Well, you don't charge normal prices.
And if you remember when TNG first hit DVD, it looked like hell. It was horrible. It looked it looked terrible. And then they did the Blu-ray release, and I am like, oh my god, because I bought one of the special editions that had, like, you know, a couple of the, like, a kind of far point or whatever, and a couple other ones, and I could not believe how good it looked. And I'm like, man,
it's gorgeous.
I was like, Deep Space Nine needs this treatment. I would drop some serious money on Deep Space Nine. Now they're repackaging the DVDs, they come out this
week. I would drop crazy amounts of money if somebody remastered Babylon 5, because he shot in wide format, and there is the raw footage that can be gone back to. And if they redid, like, the space battles.
Yeah, that's what they're
and
saying.
And the special effects.
They're saying,
but that's never going to happen because the people at Warner Brothers hate that project.
Yeah.
They actually worked to remove nominations, like when they were being put for like Hugos and Emmys and things like that. The suits at Warner Brothers were actually campaigning against their own show. They didn't want Babylon 5 getting recognition. It's insane.
And the thing is you know, the fans would support that, but just you have to be able to get enough to make it back. And they said they didn't know how TNG would go. And it went well enough that they made some money on it. But again, the sets are super expensive. But if they did Deep Space Nine, because that's like one of my favorite Star Treks, and I would love them to go back and give it that Blu-ray treatment they did with TNG. I would, and I consider the set would probably be well over $200. If I knew ahead
of
time.
Would it be worth it?
Yeah, if I knew ahead of time, like we're talking like a year ahead of time, because, again, two kids in college, I would start saving my money right now, and I would make sure that I purchase that, because I don't have it. I watch it streaming periodically from time to time, but I would love to sit down and watch that whole series again. And that, because, man, TNG, they did such a good job. I mean, granted, there was a couple hiccups here and there, and I know people may be like, well, you know, at the 1 minute mark, on, I don't care about the little glitches
the
here and there.
The overall improvement is so much better.
Job. Of course, nothing can touch what it did with the original series. I mean, that is glorious.
Well, because they shot that on film. Yeah. I actually was just listening to a podcast about Lucy Ricardo and how I Love Lucy. They wanted to film on Cinescope, and she fought for film. And when they made Desilu, it was like, everything will be shot on film, and we will use the best, because even though we don't have, you know, we can only see so much now, we will always do the best. And I thought that was really interesting that was shot on film because of her.
Yeah.
Because of how she set the company up, because she fought for it, for I Love Lucy. And I was like, wow, that's really cool.
It's interesting, the history of why people did what they did and the choices that they made, you know?
Well, like when you think about the fact that there's so much Doctor Who that's missing.
Right.
Or that the only reason we have the Monty Python stuff is that the Pythons actually stole the film.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they were going to reuse it. And stuff like that. But my husband and I are in the middle of a Deep Space Nine rewatch, and we started it over the summer. It is one of these things we can only watch when we're together, so it takes a little while to get through.
Right.
It's the best Star Trek series because all of those characters are fully three-dimensional characters from the beginning. And there are things that come to fruition in season 7 that start in season 1. And you don't even realize it when you're watching it for the first time. But you go back and you look and you're like, whoa, 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 that's that thing.
Exactly.
And they have more continuity and bringing things up over and over again than any of the other Star Trek series. I am so blown away during this rewatch. It's even better than I thought it was.
Yeah, I love it.
And it has become my favorite Trek.
Yeah, I do love it. And it never got enough love in the beginning because the production money really wasn't there in the beginning. The production values weren't where they needed to be in the first season. But after you get midway through the first season, things start to really coalesce and come together, and they start to find their identity. And by the time we get to season 2, it's like they know who they are and they know how to make this place look busy rather than an abandoned space station. And they hit on all kind of different topics. It reminds me so much of TOS because of they're not afraid to tackle these subjects, because this was like, you know, this was the show that nobody really, you know, this is the ugly stepsister, you know? And then finally it started to come into its own and got its own fan base. And I think it is absolutely fantastic. And with that being said, I tell you what, I can do this all freaking day. Just shoot through it. I really can. But
so before we go, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What comic are you reading right now?
Actually, I'm 2 issues behind on the current Superman. And this is a comic that, I mean, right now it can do no wrong. Oh, my God. Talk about a full 180 compared to the new 52 stuff where Superman was just a giant butt. You know, this is a great story. He has a son, and we have these moments where he's trying to teach his son how to do things, you know, why you do things the right way, you know, with the morality involved and all that. And on top of that, of course, we have his adventures, but the whole family life of Superman. Who would ever think that would be what really brings you in? But it is, because he has to deal with juggling family, with juggling, you know, being a superhero, and the fact that, you know, he's doing something and he's on national TV and his son can see him, and, you know, his son has abilities too, and he always wants to fly off and help, and there's like, no, you can't do that, you know, and just having to have do this, you know what I mean? So it is just, right now, it is hitting on all cylinders. I am loving this book, and every time I pick it up and read it, I think this is going to be the one that's going to disappoint, and it never does. I mean, so far, it has been amazing. All the DC Rebirth stuff has been top-notch. I've been loving all of it. I keep waiting for it to fall somewhere, but it is not. I can't get enough of it. I can't tell you the last time I told you that about, you know, about DC, last time I said those words.
Because
the new 52 stuff was like, man, I hated it. It was just so, I just did not like it. It was not for me, you know, for me.
I've been way behind on the new issues, but the first comic that I've actually read in issues and not waited for the trades has been from Valiant Comics, and it's Faith.
Yeah.
And I love Faith, but I also have like a stack of comics that I'm trying to get through. Another one that I'm really, really loving is Mouse Guard, and I heard they're making a movie.
You know, Mouse Guard is, I believe they're having a Comixology sale right now. I think it goes
really
on. I think so. I'm not exactly sure the day. I checked. Yeah, I always check Comixology like every other day, and I swear they're having a sale on it, and I am behind on it. And I almost bought them, and I'm like, man, I cannot, because I look at all the comics I bought and I haven't read yet, and I'm like, okay, I need to take a deep breath. It'll come around again. The sale will come around again. You
that's,
know,
that's another one of those Free Comic Book Day ones that I discovered because of Free Comic Book Day. I was like, oh my gosh,
they do a good
job. I love this comic. It's great. And then lastly, also comic related, did you check out Riverdale?
I did.
And I
liked it.
Yeah, me too. It's more CW than any other CW show. It has like every element of CW.
But it has a Twin Peaks kind of vibe to it too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm digging that.
But I like it. And I like all the little references. I like all the characters that they've included. I love that Kevin is one of the characters. Yeah. And really, the only person I don't like is Archie. I think he's kind of a jerk.
I'm
loving Betty and Veronica. And I really feel like this is Betty's story, not Archie's story, because it's Riverdale, not Archie. So I'm excited. This is going to be something that I will be watching.
Yeah, they're doing a pretty good job with like the episodic cliffhanger to get you to come back. And I mean, yeah, it is very teenage. I can't even say angsty because there's not a whole lot of angst. It's a lot of it's a lot of like there's some characters that you just cannot like and you want to like, and there's characters that you like that you don't want to like. But it has so
or
many
that
different
you feel
elements.
Really weird liking Luke Perry.
Yeah, right? It's like, oh my God, this wise old sage suddenly. I'm like, what's going on there, buddy?
He's doing such a good job.
Yeah.
And it has a beautiful look to it also.
It does, yeah. I couldn't wait for it to premiere. And then when it did, it was even a little bit more different than what I thought it was going to be. I knew it was going to be like obviously an ensemble cast. I knew it was going to be, they were going for that quirk factor, but it was even a little bit better with what they were doing. Cause it very much reminded the first episode, really reminded me a lot of the first couple episodes of Twin Peaks, where you have a mystery, but you're introducing all these characters. And it's like every now and then you're gonna be like, oh my God, it's this person's fault. Oh my God, it's that person's fault. And hopefully we'll get to find out, you know, who did what, you know, those don't know the first episode, there's a murder right at the beginning. That's the whole mystery of the town. That's how it
and
starts.
And I'm gonna go on record here and say that from the first episode, I'm pretty sure that the twins were sleeping together. There's something inappropriate going on with them.
Yeah.
And that's what she's talking about being guilty.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I think so. I don't know. It could be a couple different things. I'm hoping it's not that because it seems too much like I saw that coming. I hope it's something really like off in left field somewhere we did not see. That's what I'm hoping for.
But that's what it feels like. And when it opened, I totally thought that the guy that was killed, I really thought that he wasn't dead. He just ran away and his sister helped set it up. But then when they found the body, I was like, oh, okay.
They didn't hold back. They didn't hold back on the gruesomeness of that body either. I was like, whoa,
no.
Okay.
So, you know, it is comic related. So I wanted to get your take on that. I'm excited by it.
Too much to watch, too much to read, not enough free time. You know what I mean?
In the States, is Riverdale going to Netflix at the same time as it's airing on CW?
I do not think so. I haven't checked, though. But I think that the way that CW... I don't know. The CW is doing some really weird stuff now with what they're doing. They did sign a deal with Netflix, and I think that the show, the seasons are coming up. I think that like with The Flash, it came up like 6 weeks after it ended. Within 6 weeks or a couple of weeks. I don't know. There was a certain time frame that was short, but they did have their stuff on Hulu. Then they pulled it off of Hulu because they want you to use their app. Well, their app's a piece of crap because like a lot of those apps, the commercials, it's not that the commercials are long. It's the time the commercials take the load. You want to kill yourself.
Same commercial over and over again.
It's like the commercial's like, 15 seconds. The load time is like 60 seconds. And I'm like, I don't know how you can watch this. I want to kill myself. I'm like,
what's going on in Canada, at least, is, and this is the same thing that's happening with the 100. As soon as it airs, the day that it airs on the CW, it's on Netflix.
Oh, that'd be so sweet.
Yeah. And it's awesome because and I only watched the 100 because of that content delivery system.
Right.
So I'm going to say that it works because as a cord cutter, it was something that I could talk to people about the week that it aired.
Yeah. Because
everything else, like I watch after everybody else sees it.
Yeah, that's kind of, I get that. And like, for me, the only reason, like, I have a satellite company because we don't have a good cable around here.
Yeah.
But the only thing, the deal with the satellite company that saves me is that even with the lowest tier of the satellite company, because DirecTV and AT&T, since AT&T bought DirecTV here, I already had unlimited data on my phone. But now, if you have DirecTV, not only do I get unlimited data, but my bill dropped about $60 a month, my cell bill. So
yeah.
For me, if I got rid of my satellite, my cell bill would go up, and it would be the cost of what I would have for DirecTV. So that would be stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be
stupid.
And
I wouldn't have unlimited data anymore.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I, like, for me, this is a perfect storm right now where I'm sitting at. You know what I mean? And I can, I don't have any premium stations. I think I might pay, there might be like one or two like odd stations. Like, I paid like $2 a month for, like, I think I might have paid $2 a month for like a CW station, because at the time there was some kind of weird rigmarole going on, and you had to, for whatever reason, you know. But
yeah,
at any rate, my kid is now home, and she's going to be saying, "Hey, Dad, can we go walk so I can get my steps in?" Because even though I ran today, we walk every night, and it's nice because we get our alone time.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's, although every night we've walked, it's been pitch black and freezing, but it's actually decent out, and there's actually a moon tonight. So I'm like, okay, I'm all in on that. So I'm going to go get my steps.
You guys have fun.
We will. Hey, this was great. We're going to have to do this again.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm always here.
Okay.
And you should definitely do one of these with Rhiannon.
Yeah, she's already talked to me about it. She's like, "Yeah, Dad, we got to do that." I'm like, "Okay," but she got to get through this semester first, and then we'll get some time
when,
to watch a movie, you know.
Okay, how weird is it that she's in college?
Yeah, she started 2 years early too. Kids are killing me.
Well, that would be that. Yeah. That helps me just a little.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about throwing your whole financial dynamic off of like how you have things planned out, and then you're like, "Oh, okay." You know, because you have things, you know, your bonds are going to mature at a certain time, and you can use those for education and get a tax deduction, except when you start college 2 years early, and then you can't get a tax deduction. And then you're like, "Oh, okay, whatever," you know, but hey, it is what it is. She got 2 years head start. She loves it. So I can't,
that's awesome.
I can't knock it, you know. But anyway, next time we're going to do something, and we're going to have like a half a dozen topics rather than doing a film, because this has been a lot of fun. Scott Pilgrim
awesome.
Was a great movie, but it was just nice to just shoot the breeze about all the different sci-fi stuff out there.
Absolutely.
Okay, where can everybody find you?
Everybody can find me by going to nimlas.org, NIMLAS.org. And there you can find the Nutty Bites podcast, where we talk about everything that is awesome and we debate geeky topics. The next episode going out is going to be, what did we talk about? I can't even remember. Stuff that we are a fandom of, one of things that we seem to feel like we're the only ones that like. And you can find all sorts of other things, like the other podcasts that I'm on and my art there.
All right, cool. And you can find me at scifidig.com, where you should be able to download this podcast and many others, and hopefully many more to come. That's it for me. I will talk to everybody next time. Over and out.
Bye.
I'll take you for a ride on the garbage truck. Oh no, I take you to the dump, 'cause you're my queen. Uptown, I show you the sights, you know you wanna ride on my garbage truck. Truck, truck, truck. Well, there's the mansions by. Drive right through the needle's eye. Oh my, 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 my.